Today we get to jump into part two of this July series. By the way, does it feel to you like July is just kind of like zipping by? Hope you're taking some time to enjoy some time, particularly outside with friends and family. Next weekend, part three of this series, we have a guest speaker coming in. His name is Ryan Kwan. He's from the San Francisco Bay Area, founded a church there. He's a lead pastor, and so Ryan is going to step in and speak next weekend. I hope that you enjoy hearing his voice, and then I get a return the following weekend to wrap up this series called Taking Jesus Seriously. So let's begin with this. Every once in a while, you might find yourself in someone's home, and they'll have like a wall hanging, kind of a big plaque, or maybe even something written on a wall that looks something like this, in this house. How many of you have seen these? All right, in people's homes. In this house, we do real, we do mistakes, we do I'm sorry, we do second chances, we do fun, we do hugs, we do forgiveness, we do real loud, we do family, we do love. Just curious, how many of you have something like this hanging in your home? Confess. All right. Some of them are much shorter and more humorous. I like this one right here. In this house, we get wild, but only till about 9 p.m. I like that one. And one that my sons might enjoy is this one right here. In this house, we talk in movie quotes. All right. And then this next one I like, which is in this house, we ride bikes. That's one I would hang in my house if I could get permission. It's Chris's house. I just get to live there, right? In this house, we ride bikes. But some of them are longer and more extensive. You know, we say, I'm sorry. We are patient. We never give up. We have fun. We give hugs. We are grateful. We are family. We love. And so I think when an individual or a family hangs one of those in their dwelling, what they're doing is just kind of go, okay, this is how we want to operate. This is how we intend to relate. This is what we value. In short, this is what we want to be about. This is what we are about. Travel with me. Travel with me to a hillside. I think it might have been this hillside. It's historically the place where they believe Jesus gave the Sermon on the Mount. It's called the Mount of the Beatitudes, north shore of the Sea of Galilee. And when Jesus gives the Sermon on the Mount, which in your Bible occupies, man, three chapters, Matthew chapter 5, Matthew chapter 6, Matthew chapter 7, but just before the Sermon on the Mount, at the very end of Matthew chapter 4, the lead up to it is this, that when Jesus, his popularity is rocketing, people are coming to him from all over the place. And then you read the words, when Jesus saw the crowds, he just looks out and he sees all these people. He went up on a hillside and he sits down. And then you read, his disciples came to him and he began to teach them. And then you have the Sermon on the Mount. But a critical word there is his disciples. Not just what would end up being the 12 disciples, but disciple means learner. It means student. It means apprentice. And there on the hillside that day would have been his early disciples, Peter and Andrew, who left their fishing boats to follow him, James and John, who left their fishing boats to follow him. And I think a critical question is this. What are you about? I mean, we're leaving our vocations to follow you around. What are you about? How do we operate? What do you value? How do you intend for us to relate? And much of the Sermon on the Mount, I think we could represent it as something like this. In this house, Jesus is not just describing in the Sermon on the Mount the transformation he desires to happen in you, but the transformation he desires between you. How do his followers connect? How do his followers resolve conflict? How do his followers fix something when something has been broken between them in this house? I think in the Sermon on the Mount, we find much about what Jesus is about. And in today's teaching and the Sermon on the Mount and this series, Taking Jesus Seriously, a lot of it has to do with relationships, and a lot of it has to do with mending broken relationships. I'm going to ask for your attention today. What Jesus says today can radically alter the dynamics of your family, or at least radically alter the way you respond within your family. It has the power to mend marriages and to help people thrive and flourish when a marriage hasn't mended. It can change the way that you react and respond to people who work for you, people who work with you, and people that you work for. 5 years from now, it's possible that someone will come back to me and say, hey, that sermon you did in this house back 5 years ago, it saved our marriage. And I'll say, thank you, but no, it didn't. What changed your home is that you began to take Jesus seriously in a very critical teaching, and day by day, month by month, it began to bring about restoration and renewal in your home. That's what has made the difference. So in this house, today we're going to look at three relational habits. I chose the word habits intentionally because it's not just what we do. A habit is something you do again and again and again and again. Three relational habits. Are you ready for number one? Are you sure? Okay. Oh, you asked for it. Relational habit number one: in this house, we deal with our anger. How many are looking for an exit right now? In this house, we deal with our anger. So Jesus launches into this teaching on the hillside in a very interesting way. He starts by saying, hey, listen, there's something that you've heard, and you've heard it, and you've heard it, and you've heard it since childhood, but I'm going to tell you something else. So it starts like this. You have heard that it was said to people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. Jesus says, listen, you've heard that it's been said to people long ago. By the way, where had they heard that? You shall not murder. Where had they heard that? It was part of the Ten Commandments. They heard it from this guy, Charlton Heston. Moses comes down from Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder is commandment number 6 of the Big Ten. And in Jesus' day, Moses was the man. I mean, he was the one who brought God's law to the people, who established the covenant. He was like there, led them through the desert, out of the land of slavery, into the land of promise. Moses was the man. And what Jesus does here is he says, now you've heard that Moses said, but I say to you. It's like Jesus is setting himself like above Moses. Now, he's not erasing what Moses said. He's extending what Moses said. He said, I'm just going to take it farther and I'm going to take it deeper. Moses said, shall not murder. Anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I say, he's about to extend Moses. And I think it got really quiet on the hill when he said this. But I say to you, anyone who is angry with his brother or sister will be subject to judgment. It's like you kill somebody, you're in big trouble. You're harboring anger and resentment, you're in big trouble. It's like, what? Now, the word he used there for anger, anyone who's angry with his brother or sister, notice something here. It's not just being angry about something, it's being angry with someone. And you're just kind of simmering. Somebody said something, and man, you're simmering days later. Somebody did something. And you find yourself simmering years later. Somebody got something that you didn't get. A trip, an opportunity, an offer, attention that should have come to you, and you're simmering. Somebody didn't do something. responsibilities left undone, and now it's landing on me. Do I have to do everything around here? And you're simmering. What Jesus is talking about here is about simmering anger. And so it goes like, you've heard it said to people on go, you murder somebody, you're going to be hauled into court and you're going to pay for it. I'm telling you, if you have this simmering anger, that's a serious thing and you're going to pay for it. And if you go, you can't be serious. He's just getting warmed up. And he continues by saying this again, anyone who says to a brother or a sister, and what's the word there? Raka, will be answerable to the court. And you go, well, at least I'm in the clear on that one. Never called anybody a raka, whatever that is. Raka, the word raka is kind of like a non-word word. Anyone who says to his brother or sister, raka, what is that about? There are some scholars that think that raka was the sound made in the back of the throat while you were collecting saliva. Raka. What happens now is that this simmering has turned into contempt. You are nothing. You don't matter to me. You are spittle. Jesus said, now, let's talk about that. Let's talk about simmering contempt. And he's still not done yet. And if you just want the bomb to totally drop, it's his last statement. And anyone who says you fool is in danger of the fire of hell. I know where I'm headed. You gotta be kidding me. Jesus is here connecting murder, I mean, killing somebody, taking somebody out with name calling. Is it just me or does this seem kind of over the top? To connect murder and name calling. Those don't have anything to do with each other. And Jesus says, but they do. And so some years back, when talking about Jesus here in the Sermon on the Mount and what he says here about anger, I used an image that I think is helpful to recall. And it was this image. It was an image of a tree and then the root system. You got the tree that's above ground and you got the root system that is below ground. I think what Jesus might be after here is something like this, where murder is up on the top where the tree is and simmering contempt is the root system down below. And I think Jesus is going, it's the same tree. Maybe the full crop of murder isn't there. Maybe all of the fruit of murder isn't there, but the roots were there. It's kind of like, no. These are cousins. Simmering contempt and murder come from the same family tree. And you go, I don't get it. To murder someone is to make them gone, to erase them. You no longer exist. Physically, you no longer exist. Simmering contempt is, you no longer exist to me. You are nothing. I erase you in my life. And Jesus goes, man, it's the same tree. It's the same tree. It's the same tree. In this house thing, why is Jesus saying, in this house we deal with our anger? Why should this matter to him? And I think it's because anger and thriving relationships have trouble coexisting. Meaning, when I am venting my anger, it is it's almost impossible for me to thrive, to flourish as a human being, and for the people around me to flourish as human beings. I think Jesus goes after anger, not saying, okay, anger, bad. I think he's going, no, your relationships will not thrive. As you age, you surround yourself with stuff. But what's most critical as you age are people that your anger can drive away. Anger drives people out. Simmering contempt and growing relationships have a really hard time coexisting. And I think Jesus goes after anger because he wants us to flourish. And he wants our relationships to thrive. And my anger pushes people out. By the way, often my anger pushes people out who have really nothing to do with the reason that I'm simmering. Follow a guy home from work. It's Friday. end of the day on Friday, he's about ready to check out for the weekend, enjoy the weekend with his family, do some stuff, and he discovers that a project that was supposed to be completed on Friday, a proposal, is not ready and is not out. So he goes, that's what I'm going to walk into on Monday, and it's probably going to land on me. Who didn't get that done? And so he fires off an email real quick saying, hey, that project, what's the status? And he gets an auto response back. I'm sorry, I'll be out of the office until Wednesday. And he goes, great, now I'm going to be simmering until Wednesday. So he's driving home, just kind of simmering about this something someone didn't do. Pulls into his driveway, walks into the house, and there is a four-year-old, Dad, what? That four-year-old did not make him angry. He already was angry. A four-year-old just gave him an opportunity to vent his anger. Now, I want to scribble something here that I think it's one of the more important things that I've said over the years in conversations about anger, and just kind of like a 1 to 10 scale. And so just do a 1 over here. 1 is being at total peace, tranquility. All is right with the universe. I know that you've experienced that at least once in 1996. Very rarely is everything right everywhere, but this one is like total peace, total tranquility. And over here, I'm just going to do a 10. For a 10 is where you just kind of snap. What? And what I would like to suggest to you is that many times we snap because we're walking around at an 8. Dads, you got to give your kids more than 2 points. Wives, you got to give your husbands more than 2 points. If, hey, what? That person didn't make me angry. I think I was angry. And their interruption of my tranquility, being mildly inconvenienced, put me over the edge. I'm telling you, the people you work with, you've got to give them more than 2 points. Jesus is about giving instruction here on human flourishing, on thriving in relationships. It is just super hard for me to walk around at an 8 and for the people around me to thrive and for the people around me to flourish. And I know this, I'm not thriving and I'm not flourishing when I'm walking around at an 8. And so in this house, back to our point, in this house we deal with our anger. Go, thank you, Jeff. That's very helpful. Deal with my anger. Yeah, it's like I'm drowning here and you're describing the water. What do I actually do? And I'll tell you at the end of the message. Actually, I do have a couple hints at the end of our teaching day, which have served me over the years. And I got to tell you, I have wrestled with anger my whole adult life. I didn't know I was angry till I got married. but it has taken its toll on my marriage. It took its toll on my relationship with my kids in their early days. I've grown in this area, and so this is one of those areas where I can say these are a couple things that have really helped me over the years. So we'll circle to those at the end. But men and women, you might just be going, yeah, Jeff, even if I try to deal with my anger, there's still going to be times when I snap. Yes, there will be. As much as you work on anger issues, there will still be times when you snap. Habit number two is this: we resolve conflict. When we break something, we try to mend that which is broken. Now, Jesus is up on a hillside. And he's teaching his learners, his students, his apprentices there on the hillside. But he does something mentally. He has them take a journey with him. He has them journey mentally south to the city of Jerusalem where there's this structure. It's about like 100 miles away from the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. It's the temple in Jerusalem. And a centerpiece of the temple is the altar. And the altar is that place you go to offer sacrifices to God. Sometimes it was a lamb. Sometimes it was an agricultural crop representing the first harvest, and you would bring that as an offering to God. But he takes them to the temple, and he says, now, there's going to be a moment when you're in Jerusalem, you're in this holy place, it's at this holy, sacred moment, you're about to offer your offering to God, and then suddenly you go, I broke something, and I haven't mended it yet. Let's see where he goes with the teaching. He says, therefore, if any of you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something, what? Against you. You broke something. Leave your gift there in front of the altar. And then what does he say? First, go and be reconciled to them. And then what? Last line. Then come offer your gift. He's like, you're there in this sacred moment. Nothing should interrupt this sacred moment. Yeah, something should. You broke something, it hasn't been mended yet. Leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go track that person down. I'm sorry, will you forgive me? Try to make it right, and then come and offer your gift. What Jesus is saying here is incredibly important and incredibly powerful for us to comprehend. Because we offer gifts to God, they're just different gifts. My friends, around the family of Ada Bible Church, people all over the place offer the gift of service to God. Man, you serve people in your church, or you serve in a nonprofit, or you mentor, you volunteer your time in a school, you give the gift of your service. And it's the gift of money. People seeking radical generosity in blessing their church financially and other organizations. And so there's the gift of money. And then there's the gift of our attention. Some of you set your alarm clock 15 minutes earlier so that you can hear the voice of God before you barge into your day. And just read some scripture, ask God to meet you in the challenges and opportunities of the day. So we're all around Ada Bible Church, we give our gifts. We give the gift of service. We give the gift of money. We give the gift of our attention to God. What Jesus is saying here is this: making things right with somebody, mending something that's broken, is of a higher priority than bringing your gift. And what's kind of chilling to me here is the possibility that I go, man, I'm given my time, I'm given my service, I'm given my money, I'm giving God my attention in the morning. Therefore, the wake of broken relationships I have shouldn't matter. And Jesus is going, no. No, in this house, we resolve conflict. If you're offering your gift at the altar there, remember that your brother or sister has something against you. You broke something. First, go and be reconciled to your brother or sister. Then come and offer your gift. So, we resolve conflict. We mend that which is broken. So, follow me back to the dad pulling into his driveway. Angry dad. He's already at an 8. Remember that. He already drives in at an 8. And he looks at the front yard. Do you see what he sees in the front yard? You know what he sees in the front yard? It's what he doesn't see in the front yard. What he doesn't see in the front yard is a hose and a sprinkler. Before he took off that morning, he pulled aside 12-year-old and said, look at me, one job. Unhook the hose in the back, haul it to the front, and get that sprinkler going on this grass. Now he pulls into the driveway, he's already at an 8, and there's no sprinkler, and there's no hose. And there is a ceremonial slamming of the door. Marches in as he marches into the house to seek 12-year-old. He's rehearsing his speech. Door flies open. One job. I gave you one job. One job. Do I have to do everything around here? 12-year-old. I couldn't get the hose off the spigot. Good grief. Marches around back. Stomps around back. Kneels down. He can't get the hose off the spigot. And if he can't get the hose off the spigot, and he's now going to go look for some channel locks, and he doesn't know where they are, certainly his 12-year-old daughter doesn't know where they are. What? Now she's simmering. Hey, I need to apologize for two things. First, I need to apologize for kind of snapping at you, and it wasn't your problem. I had some disappointments at work today, and I kind of brought those home, and I think I'm upset with someone at work, and I took that out on you. I need to apologize for snapping at you for something you had nothing to do with. And secondly, I couldn't get that hose detached from the nozzle. I need you to forgive me for that because I snapped at you and I didn't even ask if you had tried. I need you to forgive you, Dad. What you have in that moment is a slice of heaven. Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and he invites us into it. It's like the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, when God is king. When God is king, the forces of darkness are rolled back. When God is king, relationships are restored. You have already taken a step into his life, his kingdom, with an apology. I'm sorry, will you forgive me? But for reconciliation to take place, usually an apology needs to be given, and then often so he says to his daughter, will you forgive me? I did this, and I did this. And she goes, okay, that's what he gets. Okay, go with it. Say, Jeff, you did stuff like that? You must have been a great dad. That's the dad I wish I had been. My hope in talking about this today is that some of you advance on this front way faster than I did and reconcile faster than I did and cause less damage than I did. Used to be an apology, hey man, I'm sorry, and then okay. That's I forgive you, by the way. Okay. You say, why should I forgive her? Why should I forgive him? Why should I extend my forgiveness? And the short answer is because someone extended forgiveness to you. The Lord's Prayer, or maybe you grew up in a tradition that called it the Our Father, part of Jesus' prayer for us. Help me here. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. It's like when Jesus came and gave up his life for you. It's like he came to pay off debts that weren't his. And it's kind of like forgiveness in, forgiveness out. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Forgiveness in, forgive us out. The foundation for letting somebody else off the hook is the forgiveness that you receive from God. Step into that forgiveness. Preach the gospel to yourself every week. I am more messed up than I can possibly imagine, and I am more loved than I will ever know. Live in that space. And you might find yourself cutting the people around you a little bit more grace. Habit number two, we resolve conflict. In this house, we deal with anger. It's not going to go perfectly well when we mess up, we apologize. In this house, we resolve conflict. And some of you are looking at them going, we resolve conflict. Jeff, that's super, super good. I'm going to do that someday. I'm going to get around to that. And Jesus goes, in this house, you need to get about that quick. So habit number three is we reconcile quickly. We reconcile quickly. Now, the scenario that Jesus rolls out here, I find super interesting. Because what he does is he says, now, let's imagine a situation where someone's taken somebody else to court. You're wrong. No, you're wrong. No, you're wrong. And it's just heating up and heating up and heating up. And these two dudes are on their way to court with each other. This is where Jesus steps in. It's just the image here of a judge. Now, I don't know what court looked like in first century Galilee, but you're about to go before the judge who is about to make a pronouncement. You owe him. No, you owe him. And that's what's going down here. And this is what Jesus says. He says this, first three words, read them with me, first three words, ready? Settle matters quickly. Get on it. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Don't wait till you get to court. Do it while you are still together on the way. What he's saying is before it gets to the judge, just, hey man, I've been mad at you, you've been mad at me, I feel wronged, you feel wronged, I just don't feel any sense of harmony here and connectedness to you. Is there a way we can resolve this before it gets before the judge? And Jesus says, listen, because once you get before the judge, you have no idea how this is going to go. And so this is the part that's surprising to me, where Jesus says this, your adversary may hand you over to the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you might be thrown into prison. And then he throws this down to end the conversation, truly I tell you, you will not get out until you've paid the last penny. In the first century, there was debtor's prison in Israel. If you get incarcerated, you don't get out until you've paid up. How do you make money while you're incarcerated? And so it's this catch-22 where I can't work to get money to pay you back. And I, you know, and so he says, what Jesus is saying this, things do tend to get out of control, don't they? Things do tend to unravel, don't they? And what I find interesting about this story is it's like Jesus is saying, hey, listen, if you're not going to reconcile with other people because it's one of my kingdom values of relating, then at least do it out of your instinct for self-preservation. Because if this person who's angry with you, if they go after you, the results can be very unpredictable. Get it settled, settle matters quickly. Settle matters quickly. Now, you say, no, Jeff, you have an argument, a fight with someone, it boils for a while, and then it goes away. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't go away. It just goes underground. I have had a practice over the years that I think is healthy. For a lengthy season of my life, I spent a lot of time in meetings. And sometimes these meetings, you know, free expression of opinion, welcome, you know, dissenting voices, and sometimes it turns into a little bit of an argument, and sometimes there's some energy there, and sometimes it's a bit animated. My practice was from time to time to walk away from the meeting and to grab the person that was on the other side of the opinion and just say, hey, I got a question. Do we have unresolved conflict? Meaning that discussion today, was that about the topic today, or was that about a topic 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago? Because if I said something that was offensive 3 meetings ago, I just need to know, was today's conversation about this topic, or was today's conversation about that topic? Just not everyone in the room is married, I know that, but husbands and wives, do you ever get the sense that what you're arguing about really isn't what you're arguing about? That there's just something else and it went underground? And now it pops back up in another area. So do we have unresolved conflict? No. I don't think we have unresolved conflict. Good. Then I know that today's conversation was just about today's conversation. Settle matters quickly. Just on a skyline of Grand Rapids, just the words, settle matters quickly. Today, this weekend, Chris and I were in contact with a leader. And the leader had the responsibility, their company was closing. And she had the responsibility of phone calling the people that report to her and letting them know that they were soon to be unemployed. It wasn't her decision to close the company, and it wasn't her fault that the company was closing. She was just the messenger. Had to call people, say, hey, we're going to be closing, just need to let you know. You can imagine some of the reactions. And one person was just really, really angry, just kind of blew up at her. Leader told us that that afternoon, that person called back and said, hey, I need to apologize for blowing up at you. I need to apologize to you for my anger. Now listen, I don't know whether that person has a God worldview. I don't know if that person is a disciple of Jesus. I can tell you that what just happened in that incident is very Jesus-y. Hey. Not, hey, you know, if I ever run into her someday, I'll probably apologize for that. No, that afternoon, settle matters quickly. And there was peace where there had just been emotional disruption before that. It was the peace that comes from receiving a heartfelt apology. The Apostle Paul would word it this way. He would say this, do not let the sun go down while you were still angry. That's why I chose the picture of Grand Rapids at dusk. Don't let today come and go before you try to resolve that and have the I'm sorry conversation. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. What Paul is saying here is this, I believe, is resolve today's conflict today. Resolve today's conflict today, because if I don't, then tomorrow I will have new conflict and then be carrying yesterday's conflict. And the next day I will have new conflict and be carrying yesterday's conflict and last week conflict. And do we wonder why life gets heavy and why we're not flourishing and why our most critical relationships do not thrive? And it's just kind of like, don't let the sun go down while you are still angry. And you're at a beautiful time right now because it's July and you get like 4 more hours. Just try to do this in December where you got to make the call at 4 in the afternoon. Resolve today's conflict today. So grab your phone, take your phone out, but only if you are between the ages of, seriously, take your phone out. If you are between the ages of 2 and 92, take your phone out. I just want you to photograph these three things here. In this house, we deal with our anger, we resolve conflict, and we reconcile quickly. In this house, we deal with our anger. Man, I broke something. I broke something. And we do it. We try to do it right away. In this house. Now, I said when we're talking about anger that I'd circle back and give a couple pointers. These have been super helpful to me, and I hope that it might be helpful to some of you. So let's return to the anger conversation. And just two pointers here. One just has to do with going deep. What I mean by going deep here, and this is going to be hard work, so I'm not going to say this easy fix. I'm just saying this is challenging. Anger is a secondary emotion. And we say anger is a secondary emotion. What that means is I feel angry because I feel something else. Try to figure out what that something else is. I feel angry because I feel ignored. You're ignoring me. I asked you to do it. You haven't responded. I'm angry because I feel ignored. I'm angry because I feel that you got something that I didn't. I feel angry because I feel overlooked. I feel angry because I feel dishonored. I'm simmering because you're simmering at me. Go after that other. Try to find out what is the thing beneath the thing. Because when I can go, I feel angry because I feel unloved, I feel ignored, I feel dismissed, I feel dishonored. Go after that thing. And then the follow-up question, and why does that mean so much to me? I feel angry when I feel inconvenienced. And why does being inconvenienced mean so much to me? Let God meet you there. It's some work, but what's the thing beneath the thing? And why does that matter so much? It's deeper, and it might help you explore some things, and God may meet you in some spaces when you find out what's going on beneath the surface. So first hint is just going deep. The second one is reaching out. By reaching out, I mean this week, a woman calling a trusted, spiritually minded woman and say, you know, I don't know if you heard last weekend, I am simmering all the time. And I think it's because of something that happened 17 years ago. And I don't know how to let it go, and I feel like it's affecting all my relationships. I'm not flourishing, I'm not thriving, and I don't think the people around me are either, and I don't know what to do. I'm saying is reach out. Most of us, well, no, I think I'll handle this alone. How's that worked out so far? The progress that I have made in this area, I do not think I would have made without the assistance of brothers that were walking with me and looking out for each other and helping each other grow up. Reaching out. This is a dude on a Wednesday morning, four of them meet at a breakfast place every couple weeks, and he says, hey, that thing about walking around at an 8, I walk around at like a 9.5. I just simmering all the time, and I don't even know why. My kids are paying for it, and my marriage is paying for it. Silence. And they will fix it. Probably not. What will happen, though, is sometimes when something is exposed, when you call it out, when you name it, when you get it out on the table, you have made a huge first step in letting Jesus mold you in that area. And secondly, now there's at least a shot at another insightful dude in the group going, hey, can we circle back to you in this? I mean, like every couple weeks, can we say, hey, that anger thing, how did that come out last week? And maybe it's a month later that someone says, hey, that thing beneath the thing, that going deeper, when you're walking around at a 9.5, you're angry, you feel angry because you feel, you know, what is it? And at least there's the opportunity to explore. What I'm saying here is this. I would not have made the progress I have in this area, which has been pretty significant, without having some brothers that helped me grow up in my journey, in my walk, in the way I connect, in the way I relate. What I'm trying to say is this, that tomorrow does not have to look like yesterday. And if, as you grow day by day, 5 years from now, you're kind of like going, that message changed my life. Oh, yeah, thank you. So glad you were there. Probably didn't. What has made the difference is that you began to take Jesus seriously in relationships, in human flourishing, and thriving with other people. Growing old with the people around us that should matter most. And he began to transform you, and he began to mold you, and he began to shape you into the person he created you to be. And that has made the difference in this house. In this house. In this house. This is what we are to be about. And now I want to close today by asking our campus pastors and our room hosts to come to each of your platforms and close the rooms individually, and your campus pastor or room host will pray with you and bless you as you move into your week.